environmental legislation passed in New Jersey starting in 1970 or 1968. And many of us working in the department would refer to the Other Areas Act, that was what was needed. And that was, we thought what Helen meant by the Highlands, or I thought, was there's a part of the state that is not regulated, that is not in the Pinelands, is not in the Meadowlands, is not in the Delaware and Raritan Canal area. And so that was a thinking about that. I left the Department of Environmental Protection. Okay. So my name is John Weingart. So as Ben said, I went to work at the Eagleton Institute of Politics. And while I was there, at some point, I was approached, I guess is the right word, by two people I knew who I liked and admired in the environmental land use world in New Jersey, who asked me if I'd be interested in being chair of, or being on the Highlands Council. I had not read the bill at that point. I had paid no attention particularly to its meandering through the legislature in and out over the years. And I thought that was sort of an interesting idea about which I knew very little. And then they called a couple of weeks later and said, forget it. There was some thought you might be nominated to be on the Highlands Council, but that's not going to happen. So that was fine. We went around a couple of times like that. And at some point in about 20 years ago, in August 20th, maybe, of 2004, I was summoned into the governor's office. And the governor that week was Jim McGreevy. And you, those of you who were here at that time, remember, it was an odd moment in state history when Jim McGreevy had announced to the world that he was stepping down as governor. Not that day, though. He was going to step down as governor in 4 or 5 weeks. There were reasons for that, which I sort of know, but don't really know. So I was summoned into the governor's office. It was summer. There were not many people around to begin with. There were not many lights on. There was this governor sort of on his way in or out. And so he talked to me about the Highlands and asked me how much I knew about the Highlands. And that was a short part of the conversation. And asked me if I'd be interested in being chair of the Highlands Council, because the law stipulated that the chair was chosen by the governor, not by the members of the council. So at some point in the conversation, Governor McGreevy said, well, I think you'd be, he said, we're getting a lot of pushback, but I'm a John Weingart man myself. I did not know the governor. And I had a moment of thinking, does he know he's talking to me? Or is he, who's he? Eventually, I was the Star Ledger one Sunday announced the people who were going to be on the Highlands Council, names had been put forward by the governor, and I was one of the members, and I was designated as the chair. So that was my beginning in this, and I can talk about what the first meetings were like and things like that if we want to go in that direction. But the first meeting happened. I would say everybody in the room, it felt to me like everyone in the room knew each other except me, because a lot of people who are here today had been working on Highlands protection, Highlands regulation, Highlands planning areas for a long time to get the act to be drafted, conceived of, and drafted and passed. And it was sort of an odd moment that they all knew each other. I think it was reasonably clear that if they had an election that moment, who they were going to pick to chair the Highlands Council, and that was not me. But that was the role we were assigned, and it was a great experience, which I can talk about going on later. I think one of the things I'm most interested in here about today, and I have a list of topics that I guess Ben and Carol have provided, and if I read you the list of the topics, that'll consume the whole day. So we'll try to get to as many as we can. But what was the sort of general theme of what was the goal? What were people hoping would happen with the Highlands? And what did the act accomplish? And, or what has the act accomplished? What is there the next things to do to protect the Highlands, and where do we go from here? But first, where are we? So, I mean, Michelle Byers.
Any updates, Ben?
State troopers are going down.
Okay, well, good morning, everyone. I'm really very happy to be here, and I was, I'm also very appreciative to have been able to be a part of leading up to the signing of the Highlands Act back in 2004. I worked as assistant director for New Jersey Conservation Foundation at that time, and there were a few of us, namely like Dave Moore and Tom Gilmore from New Jersey Audubon, and Jeff Tittle from Sierra, a few environmental leaders that really felt like, well, the one thing that New Jersey has going for it in terms of land use planning is the Pinelands. And here the Highlands, this is just so important to the state in terms of water quality and water supply, and there's really not a regional plan there. There's no real protection, and every town's going it on their own. So the idea was formed early on back in the mid-80s to establish a citizens organization, the New Jersey Highlands Coalition. And that was, over 20 years of major effort by local citizens. Wilma Fry, who's here today, she really graciously helped put together a list of the organizations and individuals that worked on the Highlands over those last 20 years. And they're literally about 40 nonprofit citizen groups and statewide regional county organizations, and close to 75 individuals that all really put their shoulder to the wheel and worked really hard to not only get the Highlands Coalition up and running, but then to start to work on building the support locally. And during that time, there were literally dozens of firefights that were happening all over the Highlands, lands that were threatened by major development. And the Highlands Coalition stepped up. I'm just going to read some of them because the names are really what we all love about the Highlands. Copperas Ridge, Hamburg Mountain, Sterling Forest, Sparta Mountain, the Farney Highlands, Pyramid Mountain, Schooley's Mountain, Weldon Brook, Pahatcong Grasslands, Scott's Mountain, Musconetcong Mountain, Point Mountain, Wildcat Ridge. I mean, there are just a few, but these were all major battles that the Highlands Coalition, local citizens all worked very hard to stop development and get those lands into permanent preservation, whether it was through Green Acres or through federal funding, county funding, what have you. So that was 20 years and a lot of effort. And I just think we wouldn't be here today without all of them. So I just want to say, if you're one of those people who was working on Highlands issues for 20 years or even a few years before the act, please stand and be recognized. Margaret, come on, Margaret. And Bill, come on. Bill. Stand up. I'm sure you all know this, but these kind of legislative actions don't happen without grassroots support. It's the same thing in the Pinelands. If people aren't involved and engaged, the governor's not going to wake up someday and say, oh, I'm going to go, fight with the builders and all the land use around the state and create a big regulatory program. It takes an enormous amount of public support. So then those early days, the Highlands Coalition was really managed by volunteers and by the leadership primarily of Dave Moore and Tom Gilmore, who took turns chairing all of the many meetings that were at Bamboo Brook that went on for decades. And all the citizens would come and people would have an agenda and everyone had a role to play. And a lot of it was generating support within the municipalities. Local mayors, local planning boards, environmental commissions, citizens groups, to really get out there and build that kind of outreach. And frankly, to be honest, all those development threats against those key properties, that helped a lot because that really galvanized people and got them engaged. It was a real illustration of the fight. Oh, hi. All right. Good morning, Senator Smith.
Morning.
Been hearing us?
Can you hear us here?
Yes, I can, very clearly.
Well, okay. Well, welcome. It's Michelle Beyer. I'm John Weingart.
Yep.
And Ben.
Nice to see you.
We're starting with sort of how we all got to be aware or involved in efforts to protect the pinelands.
Yeah, and I was just sort of revisiting how important it is that all of the local individuals and organizations were to building the groundwork to get this to happen. And you know, if you look at the timeline, there's a very, very draft timeline and list of people that you can pick up on the way out that Wilma put together. This goes back to the 1907 Potable Water Commission. So this is like a really long-term effort, and that's what you need. So the coalition formed in 1988. There was a regional study authorized by the U.S. Department of Agriculture in 1990, and that was updated in 91. Finally, Farney Highlands, the plan to protect the Farney Highlands, that was, you know, one of Helen Fenske's major driving forces. I mean, you had to do it. She just got things done. And NJCF published a book called Treasures at Risk, and Allison Mitchell, the author of that, is here. Thank you, Allison. And then from there, it went on to additional Forest Service reports. Hi, how are you? Welcome.
It said 9:45.
I know. We were started early. We couldn't wait.
I thought the Super Bowl was in town. There's no parking. Gosh, how are you?
I'm good. Good. So I don't know if you remember, but Governor Florio established the Skylands Task Force in 1992, and Bruce Babbitt came to visit the Highlands, and there was a lot of hope for maybe something would happen at that time. But subsequent administrations in New Jersey were not interested in regional plans for various and sundry reasons. So that kind of just had to wait. And then from there, we just kept pounding along. When the State Planning Commission designated the Highlands as an area of special state concern, which didn't have a lot of teeth, but it helped tee up the whole idea that the area needed preservation. And the four-state Highlands Coalition formed, and then there was federal legislation to create funding for Highlands protection across the four states of the Highlands region. And then as we went along, I'll be a little brief here, but the five-county Highlands preservation effort was formed with Margaret Nordstrom to try to bring together the counties that were most affected to see if there's a way to have a county-wide preservation form, and that helped push things along even further to a Highlands task force. But many of you in this room were on the task force, and that's where the rubber met the road in terms of how the legislation eventually came out. And I do have some thoughts about that, but I could talk about that later. So I guess the one thing I just want to say is, it really does take a village, and it was a huge effort. There are issues with the Highlands plan now that I think we all have faced and we would like to see rectified going forward, but it's really pretty darn good. So that's where I do have some recommendations that I'd like to share later, but we could do that.
To get that commendation of pretty darn good is quite something for a government.
Well, a lot of compromises that were made that if in retrospect as a member of the Highlands Task Force, I would have fought harder to prevent. But be that as it may, it's a great regional plan.
Let me just say one thing and then turn back to the two senators. You have a colleague over my shoulder here.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Josh.
But I'd say, Michelle mentioned this timeline going back to 1907. Right? And that was one of the emblematic of one of the subtexts for me running through the implementation process of the act, was that for some people, many of the people in this room, this was way overdue, this effort, and it had been being talked about and planned going back over a century. For other people in this room, and maybe in this room, but who were interested in living in the Highlands, the act had major implications for the value of their property and what they could do with their land, and it came to them to some extent as a total surprise, the law and the plan. They hadn't been paying attention in 1907 when this was started, and they were looking at it for the first time in 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008. And so that was one of the tensions, and there are others we can get into in the morning that I think underlay a lot of some of the discussion that went on through the process. But Senator Smith, you had gotten three words in when we cut you off. So, you know, how did you get involved in this? This is one of your many issues.
Other than to say hello, and as long as we're reminiscing about the days of yesteryear, you may remember because we had a roadshow. We went all over doing hearings and talking issues about the Highlands Act. So I remember vividly two of the hearings. One, I think, was in Ringwood, and we had a large auditorium. It was primarily filled with realtors and developers and construction people, and they all had signs on stakes basically saying death to the Highlands Act. And whenever we would start to speak, they would bang the stakes of their signs on the floor. So you'd get a drumbeat is not even the correct word. So we learned from that. And the next hearing was at Voorhees High School. So when we arrived at Voorhees High School, there is a state police helicopter overhead flying. There are rows of bulldozers parked in the parking lot. There are state police with automatic weapons and dogs. And there is a monitoring of the people going into the school auditorium. They could only have 400, so, and that filled up like in an hour before the hearing. And then the only way they would let additional people in is if people left. So when John talks about people not paying attention, when they started to pay attention, holy God, it was brutal. It was probably the most, John and I are in the legislature for a significant period of time, but I think I can say without contradiction, it was one of the most intense legislative processes that I've ever seen. But now that it's 20 years old, and I don't know how the 20 years passed. I mean, John and I don't look a day older. So you know, I'm wondering where the time went, but so many good things have been accomplished. And by the way, probably one of the reasons why we have half a chance at getting through global climate change is Highlands, the forests that have been protected, the water supply that's been protected. Thank God it's here to help New Jersey get through what's going to be some tough times ahead. So it was great being on this team. This really was a great effort. And John did a fabulous job on the assembly side. And it wasn't easy. You know, we've done a lot of things over our careers. This probably was one of the hardest things ever, in my opinion. I don't know what John thinks, but that would be my opinion.
Yeah, Bob, I'll agree with that. I'll build on that one story, you know, as it related to the event we had with the state troopers and the, you know, the protection we had. All of a sudden, you know, if you remember the name Curtis Fisher, that might be familiar to some of you. Curtis was the governor's point person as it related to the Highlands legislation, among with many others. And, you know, Bob and I are, you know, mayors, right? So we're used to mixing it up. And notwithstanding all the protection, although knowing we had state police close by, a couple of the builders got a little aggressive. And Bob and I stood up and we were like ready to go. And poor Curtis stepped in the middle and said, no, everybody go back to their seats. Anyway, all right. But, you know, it was literally that contestuous. But why? Money, right? And the one thing from 30,000 feet, and first off, you know, I was speaking to my chief of staff, Alex Kaiser, who just came in. He texted me and said, there's so many cars here. What's going on? When we talked about 20 years ago, he reminded me that he was in elementary school. That having been said, as old as I am, I don't go back to 1907. I don't remember that either. So I just, you know, from 30,000 feet, and first off, I'm emotional looking at all of these faces out there. The people I've known for 20-something years, all of whom, you know, as we look a little different than we did when we started out, have really done great things in their professional lives. This being, you know, probably on the top, at least for me, top of the list for all. So I just want to celebrate all of you for being a part of what's happened here and the stewards going forward. The thing, you know, when it's amazing that it got done. It really, really is when you think about that. and what we were faced. You don't have to be all that bright, and God knows I'm not, but it took through the history of the world from the time man first stood upright through all of the things you could think about, you know, the Greeks and the Romans and the British, and until 1820, until there was 1 billion people on this planet. And then it was only till 1975, all of a sudden there's 4 billion. And 20 years later, in the year 2000, there's 6 billion. And that continues to grow. Go on the other side of it, knowing that it should be fine. We all need water, right? But 72% of the earth is covered by water, except for only 1% is potable. So it didn't take a lot of a forethought as it relates to what we needed to do and how important it was. And then you put it in Jersey perspective. You know, there are many, there's joys and vicissitudes, my favorite word, of being here in the state. And we have many challenges resulting in needs for expenditure and transportation and things that just go and inherent are as to who we are. But the one major asset that we had was clean water. And this amazing source that was bountiful and was going to be in a position to keep it affordable, almost to the point that we had built the better mousetrap and people were going to beat their doors down to get back to New Jersey as things went in the natural progression, sadly, like they are, both worldwide and nationally, concerning what a resource water has come. It's amazing that, and it'll get even better, New Jersey has the third least expensive water as a state in the country. So all of the stuff, and again, God knows I'm not a visionary. Yeah, I got involved in this. I was elected mayor. I 2 years later had an opportunity back when there were, so to speak, dual office holders, that terrible thing I was, to go to the assembly with redistricting. And I had a good buddy named Mark Levy from West Orange, who was the head of Audubon. Mark said, I want you to get together with this guy, Jeff Tittle. I'd just like you to meet him. And I met Jeff. And with all of his, I wouldn't call it baggage, you know, I love the guy, but, you know, Jeff is Jeff. And you know, and I didn't have a background in environmental science. You know, I was interested, like all of us, but nowhere anything like you about your training and, you know, all you did. And Tittle said, it'd be great. You know, we just lost Barbara Buono, actually. She just went to the Senate. We have nobody in the assembly. So I asked to be on the Environment Committee, and that's what came of it. And that's when I met my hero, Bob Smith. And, you know, the whole Batman and Robin thing started, I guess, originating with the Highlands Act and thankfully many things after. It'll be 10-year anniversary, Bob, for the permanent source of funding, you know, relative to our, you know, Garden State Preservation Trust Fund. You know, so, and again, that's all because of each of you. So in any event, but I mean, just think about what you all got accomplished. There were, I think 52 major developments were stopped because of this. I mean, it's just incredible to me that you know, we know the right thing to do with climate change, but right, the moneyed interests keep it from happening. And in this instance, everybody against all odds, you know, put together a regional plan that saving thousands and thousands of acres. Otherwise, as Rutgers said, if continued to develop on the pace we were, it would have cost us about $50 billion, I'm lying to you, $40 billion with the B by now, just to provide clean water to the 9 million people that live here. So I'll just answer questions, but I've said my piece. Thank you for letting me participate.
One of the ways, the way New Jersey has approached environmental protection and land use to a large extent has been regionally. That rather than pass a state planning act or a state anything, we've divided the state up and said, okay, first let's have the Hackensack Meadowlands. And each one, it seemed to me, was there was a governor who made that, or it became one of their top accomplishments to say of Governor Cahill, well, the Meadowlands Commission got created, certainly Governor Byrne, the Pinelands, and you can attach a governor to each of those efforts. For me, as something of an observer at that point, Governor McGreevy's involvement in this came as a surprise. That it was not, he has not campaigned to be the environmental governor, as far as I know. But can anyone speak to how his role in getting this to, he signed it?
Bob is a Middlesex guy, so maybe he could start, and I have a thought or two.
Well, at the end of the day, no matter what kind of a governor you are, New Jersey needs clean water. And Jim McGreevy, who may be the next mayor of Jersey City, which just tells you politicians get recycled all the time. You know, once it was pointed out how important that water supply was to our citizens, he was on board. He didn't have any hesitation whatsoever, because clean water is an imperative to civilization, to public health, to anything you want to do. And that was the overriding issue in the Highlands. So he wasn't hard to convince, still a good guy, and still crazy enough to want to be in public office. So kudos to McGreevy. But it, as John pointed out, this was not easy. I think it took almost a full year of hearings and adjusting to issues. And by the way, guess what the hardest, it's like one of these sleeper things that you would never think of. The hardest thing was defining the Highlands. All right. If you look at the law, there are, you don't see a lot in the way of meets and bounds descriptions. What you see is the railroad line, this stream bed, this road, and the Highlands, generally, because there was no way if you ever wanted to do meets and bounds, we'd never have a law. You know, we'd be waiting 10 years for that kind of description to go on. But what it does say is, you know, one of the things Highlands may want to think about is whether those lines should be expanded or modified, because the lines were chosen based on physical features, on geography. And, you know, I think the basic outline of Highlands is where our water is from, but it might be time to rethink whether there's a need for an expansion or modification. It's been 20 years. You know, we think we know what we're doing on it. And I wouldn't be unhappy to see the Highlands Council take a look at the law and see what kind of updates are needed. In fact, John, I think you're prime sponsor on a bill to update Highlands somewhat. I think I'm second, but I'm not 100% sure. But there's...
That was a mistake on my part.
anyway, not really. You know, when you're ready, we'll fire. You know, one of the good things about having a 20th anniversary is you get a chance to look back. And good things happened. And coincided with other things like the stable source of funding for the acquisition of open space, farmland, and some historic preservation. We now have about $150 million a year going into that fund. And that helps John and I also keep one of the promises that we made. We would get letters, especially from a couple of members from the agricultural community, saying, "You're killing us. You're taking away our property rights. We can't do anything with the property. You're taking my legacy to my children." And what John and I and everybody in the room said, there should be fair compensation. So on a couple of occasions, we've adjusted what the formula should be for the acquisition, either of the property in fee or easement, to make it as fair as it can be. And as a result, a lot of consensual acquisition and preservation has occurred. And hopefully we'll find ways to even do more of that. Because one of the keys, again, to trying to survive what's happening to the planet is to have more open space. And the Highlands is just the jewel of New Jersey. There's no question about it. So.
I'll just mention, and thank you, Senator, relative to Jim McGreevy. He's not here, obviously, but if he was, I'm going to predict, and he's told me himself, that he'll think of signing the Highlands as the signature piece of accomplishment, you know, during his, abbreviated tenure. Just as an aside, not that anything was funny about it, but he signed this literally 2 days before he resigned. And I have to say, a couple of buddies of mine, you know, kind of asked me, because it was him and I in the newspapers giving each other a big hug. And then 2 days later, he like resigned as it related to, you know, his news to all of us. So my buddies and wife got a kick out of that. So there you are, John. The one, you know, just a little piece of anecdote with Ben Spinelli, who was up here before, you know, big secret, this was my friend from the time I was in the fifth grade, you know, for our entire lives. We went to high school together, college and law school. And Ben moved up to Chester and, you know, followed his dad's path and became a local official and a mayor. So, and he, out of necessity, I can tease him, if not philosophy, he became a Republican and was a Republican mayor that was in the Highlands. So Ben, as you all know, in his heart was an environmentalist. It meant a lot for a Republican mayor to come out, as Ben did, and courageously so, to say, I'm for this. And there was a lot of air cover from that. And building on something Bob said, too, about taking a look at the different lines, expansions or otherwise, you know, you'd be fair about this. We got this through the legislature. That's because it wasn't only environmental science, but it was political science as it relates to the way that, you know, some of these lines were drawn to maybe keep a key approved development, allowing it to go forward, you know, for the big picture of the whole thing could have collapsed as opposed to, you know, dealing with nuances like that. And again, the governor's office, you know, from a legislative perspective, we don't usually get into that ugly part of the detail. And that was the Governor McGreevy, who he and his staff made all those parts fit to get the votes that we did.
While New Jersey's addressed land use environmental issues on a regional basis, it shied away from giving any more power to the Department of Environmental Protection. So for each of these initiatives, Highlands being Highlands, but Pylons before it, the law included creating a new entity in this case. My understanding of why this is called the Council Highlands and the Pylons was a commission, was in the debate on the Highlands legislation. Somebody said, commission sounds too powerful, let's call it a council, that sounds weaker. Didn't change any powers, but it was, in any case, it was a statement saying there is a large Department of Environmental Protection, but they're not the place where responsibility for this initiative or these initiatives should lie. I don't know, Michelle, you can speak to
I have a little bit differing view of that. I think in the Pinelands, you have a comprehensive management plan that is overseen by a commission that has both broad regulatory and planning authority, all encapsulated in the same body. And I think that having that accountability within one body was very successful in the Pinelands. One of the compromises that was made for the Highlands was to bifurcate those powers and keep the regulatory authority in Trenton at the DEP and have the Highlands Council have the planning authority. And I think that's made a very difficult ability for the council staff to be able to operate fully, especially when there's differences of opinion and there's two silos. There's a silo in Trenton and a silo up in Chester, and they don't always work together really well. So I think that's one potential reason to revisit the act to see if that could be brought back together in a more comprehensive, more effective way to deal with the Highlands land use. And then the other thing I think that ought to be looked at is the bifurcation of the preservation and planning areas. That was just a major compromise that was made by the Highlands Task Force as a way to get this legislation passed. But there are, you know, thousands of acres in the planning area that don't have the protection that they deserve. It was somewhat arbitrary. I mean, there was a line drawn to separate the two that was based on, you know, science on water resources and groundwater, forest habitat, et cetera. But the bottom line is the whole Highlands is really critically important for the water supply. So I think it's worthwhile to revisit that and put the Highlands back together and put the powers back together.
Yeah, that's a great reason as well, and a very good point made. Clearly, the Pinelands Commission, you know, is different and has more authority than does the Highlands, and that was done again by virtue of compromise to get it to the goal line. And so I'm now looking at my friends in the environmental community, who often, and it makes me a little crazy. And Bob, maybe you'll agree with this: they let the really good get in the way of the, it has to be perfect. And there's no compromise to any of that. In this instance, to the community's credit, there was that compromise enabling us to be where we are today, or else we'd be all, a few of us saying, we could have. And so what we have the product of, while less than perfect, would be really non-existent, but for all the compromises that were made. And we should keep that in mind relative to the other things we're trying to move through at the present time.
I totally agree with you, John. I remember a bunch of legislators who would get up in caucus and say, the perfect shouldn't be the enemy of the very good. And that frequently is the problem. And it's not just in Highlands legislation, but it's across the board in all environmental legislation. You know, you're going to be more successful if you're trying to move the ball ahead, get a better system, get more protections than saying, I got to have it 1,000% perfect or I can't support it. You know, we're human beings. We don't do perfect very often. And I totally agree with John. This was necessary in order to get the bill passed. But I also don't disagree with Michelle. I mean, it's 20 years, maybe time to take a relook. And I think the starting point for that should be the Highlands Council itself. I'm sure John and I would love to see recommendations from Ben and the council about what could be done to improve the Highlands. And let's raise it up a flagpole and see who salutes. But you're doing a great job. The 20 years have been well worth the effort. And as a result, we have a better, cleaner state with a much better water supply than most.
Michelle, you may be the best person to ask this question, but for that big compromise to have preservation area, have a protection area and preservation area, can you sort of quantify or point to examples of what the council's impact was on the protection areas? It was a compromise, but was it something of value in the law provided?
Well, I think, you know, just remembering back to the day at the Highlands Task Force, this is my memory, I'm sure others have other memories, but I remember, I think it was Charlie Couperus who said, you know, ratchet it down in the preservation area and do whatever you can do to preserve that and let the rest of it go. That was the compromise that was made. I think, you know, you're right about not having the perfect be the enemy of the good. I agree with that. And I think those was a compromise that had to be made to move forward. And, you know, there's been 50% of the preservation area is now preserved. We definitely need to do more. There's still 150,000 acres in the Highlands overall with a price tag of $1.5 billion that need to be preserved. They're high priority conservation lands for water. And a lot of those are also in the planning area. So I think this is a really good time to take a good hard look at what's been done, what's been really successful, and what are the areas where we could really ratchet it up, because we're facing unprecedented challenges now with climate change that, you know, we didn't even think about 20 years ago. And water quality and water supply, which we thought was all bountiful and forever, it may not be so. Just as Ben talked about that, you know, the variability of rainfall and how do you manage water supplies when you've got, you know, 75 inches of rain within a few months and then drought. There's some real issues facing the Highlands now. So I think it's a good time to look at it. And I think I answered your question. Yeah, there's been some really good work done there.
Should we throw this open to questions or comments?
I just want to say one thing real quickly. I want to shout out to the Highlands Coalition, which I said before started out with volunteers and grassroots, and it really made a huge effort and impact over, you know, 20 years. But we did have several executive directors of the New Jersey Highlands Coalition, starting with Tim Dillingham, who's here, Bill O'Hearn, who's not here, Tom Gilbert, who took over for a while. And then when the coalition finally got its 501c3 and became independent, then Julia Summers stepped up to take the helm. And that's been quite a while now, right, Julia? So these people are in it for the long haul. I just really wanted to thank them and show appreciation for what they've done. Thank you.
I just did just one or two other quick thoughts and questions would be great. But relative to my favorite memory of all of it, we were at the Anheuser-Busch plant in Newark, and it was for purposes of that's where they get the, you know, the water that makes that terrific beer. And all the workers were out and everybody's all ginned up. And I had my best line ever. I said, if but for the Highlands, you know what would happen? You would all be making Miller. And they all start cheering and screaming. And then the other piece, and I, God knows I don't mean to pick on him, especially because it referenced his military service, but Mike Daugherty, you know, I guess would continue to be, you know, somebody that was very much against, you know, the concept of this regional plan and alike. And in part on the floor, what we were discussing related to the number of septics that could be in the preservation area versus per acre versus the number that could be in the planning area. And he got up and said, when I was in the military, we would be able just to, you know, put a silt, you know, cloth, and we'd be able to pee in it, and then we could drink it. I was like, Mike, that's what we're trying to avoid. And our colleagues had a similar reaction. Oh, that, you see that? You do remember that, right? And you know, one, and I don't know if this will come up in the questions, but, you know, this is a dynamic process. Now, you know, again, where I come from, I'm not, do nothing but support affordable housing and COA and the recent quantification of all that. But it really had an impact on the Highlands. So you mentioned Julia and Elliot and then the relationship that that we have with Ben. We were able to come up with some language that really made certain that that would actually probably encourage a lot of the Highlands towns who hadn't come in, you know, to the plan on the planning area to determine to do so. So, you know, that there's been a recent change that's not insignificant relative to the Highlands.
You can identify yourself and make a short comment or question, since we're lots of people.
Hi, Bill Westhoven from the Daily Record and NorthJersey.com. I was wondering if you guys could just deep dive a little bit and sort of discuss how the specific issue focus has changed from 20 years as opposed to now. In other words, what were the bullet point priority issues then? What are they now? And two related questions. I'm curious, how common was the phrase climate change 20 years ago as opposed to now? And if you want to set up an argument, all you have to do is say climate change. And also, if it doesn't come up as one of the modern bullet points, how is the affordable housing mandate affecting the Highlands now as opposed to 20 years ago when the mandate was not being enforced? And it is now, of course, we're seeing massive development.
Bob, I'll let you jump in and then you start.
Well, the part that I'll cut out, I would specifically like you to talk about because you've been the leader on it, is the affordable housing changes in the recent affordable housing law. I think it was A4, A5, something like that. But in terms of 20 years ago, we weren't talking very much about global climate change. Unfortunately, there's actually a New York Times weekend magazine section that's about 2 years old, where the writer describes how we had a magic moment during the Reagan administration, wherein we were working on chlorofluorocarbons. You remember the hole in the ozone layer. But simultaneous with that, the scientists were dealing with global climate change issues and suggesting that we start to reduce our carbon footprint. So anyway, this goes through all the agencies, and it's now a proposal on the president's desk. His chief of staff was John Sununu, the former governor, I think, of New Hampshire. And Reagan said, look it over, tell me what you think. So Sununu looked it over and said, not really. You know, we have to do a little something about ozone. The rest, maybe not so much. Anyway, you want to read that story. The entire magazine, Stunning Magazine, is devoted to it, and it will just blow the top of your skull off. There was a moment when we could have been in a much better position and all the background work had been done. But 20 years ago, there was not a lot of talk about global climate change. Today, there's a huge amount of talk. So the priority was water supply, preservation of water supply. More than half the water of the state of New Jersey comes from the Highlands. And if you remember, again, back to the days of yesteryear, we every other year would have a drought. All right. And so water supply was the driving force. Now, today, after 20 years of experience, I think the shift is more toward global climate change issues, because just that open space itself is a major carbon sink. Related issues are, how do we manage the forests in the highlands? And I will tell you that we set up a task force to try and come up with some recommendations. Only had 800 people participate in it. At the end of the day, just like
Bob, you can't see, but Emil is rolling his eyes.
Well, that's good. Good to stimulate him. But the moral on the story is that there are, at a minimum, at least two sides to the forestry issue about what's the right way to manage forestry in an era when global climate change is accelerating. And everybody's still working on that to try and figure out the right answer. But today, that's more of an issue. And then the other issue that's front and center 20 years later is, how can we make the highlands even more effective? One of the suggestions that John and I are working about is maybe having them have separate monies for land acquisition, so that we're sure that the preservation continues as aggressively as it can be. And the other truth is, the DEP is in sore need of staff. You know, that agency has been crushed, Democrat and Republican governors, and it's a shadow of itself. We're down to a situation where they answer the phone, but barely. All right, so that's another new thrust in terms of the environmental movement in the state. We really do need a vibrant DEP. And again, money's always short. There's never enough money. But that's what I would say is the shift. And John, you're the expert on the Mount Laurel stuff in the Highlands. Let me throw that in your direction.
Yeah, I don't know about expert in any of it, but I can USA Today that piece of it, and just basically saying that the intensity of making certain that the goals of Mount Laurel are met as it will relate to the rest of the state are changed and modified for the uniqueness as it relates to the Highlands, so as not to have the effect of developing places that shouldn't be. And I'll make everybody bore tears if we get into the deep detail of that, but that was put in the way with a lot of several professionals here that are in the know to say, if you do this, this will help and we'll be in good shape. And I think already a lot of the towns want the protection from having to do what the new Affordable Care Act, what the new co-regulations say, are changing their way of thinking of coming into the, you know, the plan and being in compliance in the planning areas. So it's, you know, a work in progress of having a really good effect. Regarding, you know, the climate change really wasn't what we were talking about. You know, it was 20 years ago, it was just different. We should have been. Some of us were. But now, as opposed to when somebody today says, oh, it's the green scam, and you look at them and say, come on, you know, get out of your cocoon. Back then, there were plenty of people in our own Democratic caucuses that certainly weren't convinced of, you know, the need to move in the drastic ways, frankly, that we should have. It was about water supply. And what we did know was happening was, like, out west, the Colorado River, population growth, you know, so there were a lot of components. And that Rutgers study was, I always argue, environmental issues from an economic perspective. And talk about a $40 billion price tag, which would have come to be payable as of today if we continued to develop as we were. And that would make the state fully unaffordable. Could you imagine adding a $40 billion price tag on top of everything else? So, and I don't listen, but, you know, Senator and I, and any member of the legislature, I would imagine, or governor or otherwise, don't, you know, we put out the best we can to make commitments to, you know, compensate the landholders as would be equitable. But the enormity of the cost of that, you know, I mean, I think there was a TDR of like 1.2 million. I remember Eileen Swan, which was a name you didn't mention, you know, talking about people that could have applied, you know, for TDRs or otherwise type of compensation, just didn't, because they said just not enough, you know. And then Eileen's response, I think, was, you know, well, we can't, how do you know if you don't apply? But that's one certainly negative and it's just really, it's impossible to do. There's not the kind of resources to, you know, to pay or go through TDR or otherwise for what's been changed by virtue of this legislation.
I would just add on the affordable housing side, John Hasse at Rowan University is doing a complete data layer on geographic information system mapping. He's mapping all of the available lands in New Jersey, meaning all of those lands that have not yet been developed. And he is identifying those lands that make sense for affordable housing. So that it doesn't become like all these firefights all the time. But here is an overall guide. There's plenty of land remaining in the state that's not considered high priority conservation lands. So that data layer he's doing on behalf of Fair Share Housing. And I think that ultimately people will have access to that data and they'll be able to look to be very clearly where it makes sense to have affordable housing and where it doesn't. And of course, Ben's working on that issue as well in the Highlands. So I think, you know, over time, I think that's going to get better rather than having those two mandates be at odds with each other all the time.
Senator, I know you just had the hearing on resiliency, right? You know, the nothing better than 3 acres of forest that can absorb a million gallons of water, you know, when it relates to how.
So true.
I had one thing to your question or something else to put on a list, I guess, for the future, is I chaired the first 94 meetings of the Highlands Council. I would say, I mean, and I don't think anyone mentioned climate change, just to continue on that theme. Certainly a lot of the issues that were talked about in terms of water supply were intertwined with climate change, but it wasn't a phrase that rolled off the tongue as often as certainly it does now. But I think the issue that caused the most contention and was commented on the most was something you referred to going back as one of the compromises was compensation, particularly to farmers, and whether the act was really a win-win for everybody or whether there were winners and losers, and whether there was enough to compensate landowners who thought they were deserved compensation or a process that would be considered fair by those involved. I just add that to the list. Other comments or questions? Or, yeah.
I'm Mark Hitchin, I live in New Jersey Hills Media. I was wondering, has the Highlands Council exceeded the expectations that you put on it 20 years ago? Or if it has, where has it succeeded? And maybe where has it failed? And maybe what's it have to do to improve what it hasn't accomplished?
I did not think it would survive 8 years of a Republican governor. And it did.
And by the way, remember there were three constitutional challenges to the law that it survived. Right? So, you know, the draft, taking that time to do all those hearings and drafting it very carefully, I think made the constitutional survival stand in place. But the original question was, has it succeeded? Far beyond expectations. I mean, you now have really good regional planning designed to protect our water supply. Can we do better? We can always do better.
I mean, you know, you've had a governor literally who campaigned on dismantling, you know, and others who were put on the commission who said, I'm going because I'm going to be there to dismantle it. And yep, the fact that survived through that, I think, speaks volumes as it relates to voting very, very well for the future. We have to stay vigilant. There's a couple openings now, as a lot of you have been involved with, where we have a couple of the same type of individuals looking to be a part of the team, but not necessarily pulling in the same direction. So we have to keep our eye on it, but it's pretty amazing that 20 years have gone by and as much progress is made as it has in light of the politics.
Did you do anything to improve it?
Let me run the whole thing. I get to do whatever I want. Yeah.
My name's Jim Lyons. Congress and actually voted legislation that led to the initial study. I returned to New Jersey and constantly complains about constraints that the Highlands Act communities will become a lot of time. I want to encourage. encourage you to look at the opportunities, and I know Ben is that now, the opportunities for promoting outdoor recreation in the Highlands. Outdoor recreation is now a multi-million dollar industry, $1 billion industry in the United States. And the visitation from the surrounding metropolitan areas, the Highlands area, is increasing. But those communities have yet to really focus on the opportunities to capitalize on that outdoor recreation interest and to use it as a source of economic development to support many of the activities in communities like ours. There's a tremendous opportunity there that's compatible with the purposes for which the Highlands established. And I think it could help supplement the income of many of these communities and alleviate some of the pressures for development to the extent that it's really driven by an effort to just generate position growth.
That's a well-made point. Were you on the staff of Congressman Frelinghuysen, or what was?
No, I was on the House Agriculture staff. Yeah. So I wrote the authorization, and then subsequent to that, I was Undersecretary of Agriculture, President Flint. So I got to see the implementation of
peace. Thanks for your service, and speaking for Bob and I. I don't know, Bob, if you could hear me, but the question, if you have comment on it, or the comment was more related to being more open to recreation as part of the preservation and planning areas to the communities that would be helpful, I think, if I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, so thanks for repeating it. I have a great deal of difficulty hearing the last speaker, but overall, environmental philosophy, are you John Muir or Gifford Pinchot? John Muir, even though my Sierra Club friends will object to the characterization, was about preservation and don't disturb it, don't do anything with it, just keep it preserved. Gifford Pinchot, who had been the governor of, I think, Pennsylvania, became the Secretary of the Interior, and his philosophy was, let's have parks that people can go in and enjoy the outdoors. And by doing that, you increase your constituency for the environment. So I'm a Gifford Pinchot guy. I think that that showing New Jerseyans how gorgeous their natural vistas are and the few mountains that we have and the beautiful streams and so on is to the benefit of the environmental movement. You need people to know how really stunning and valuable these resources are to the state. And one of the ways you do that is by allowing people to view them and enjoy them. So like I said, I'm on the Gifford Pinchot side of the equation.
One small thing in this context, when the council was just getting started and I met with its first director, Adam Zellner, who's here today, one of the things he put forward was to get a license plate, a New Jersey Highlands license plate as an option. That's one of a number of steps you could take to bring more visibility to this as a region and more attention. And it's a small thing, but I think as someone who lives outside the Highlands, nobody knows what you mean when you say the Highlands, unless you're sort of in this room.
Point of personal privilege, I see that Debbie Manns, who was one of those professionals that was a big part of making certain that this act was put together, stepped in, and I'll never forget, she wouldn't let me buy her a hamburger in Pals. She insisted on splitting the check. God, Deb, more like you are needed in government.
There's a microphone over here.
It's okay, I'll use the loud voice.
Just so folks know, just that
Adam Zellner, just one thing in the history and the word that was forgotten, you can probably yell it over here, the word sprawl, suburban sprawl. I was the head of Smart Growth before I came up to find Ben. I wondered why there was a landfill in Chester before he told me it's out because it's limited. It's a landfill. But just to go to the success of you guys, or many, for those who were stuck in the traffic, I want you to imagine. Toll, not to pick on Toll, but chaos, pick them. They were all here. Clinton, hundreds, 800 minutes at some point. If you look at what happened with Executive Order 4, turning the whole idea of Martin Luther, the whole idea of kind of urban redevelopment. Ironically, Jimmy Reeve, did the Highlands go back to where the Highlands water goes? mayor, you see success of what you guys did. It's actually in the redevelopment down in your backyard and all the other backyards in the transit villages, in part it pulled resources for new sewers, new roads, and everything back in, and it preserved that here. And so when you look at some of the things that were going on in suburban sprawl and measuring success, and with some of the thousands of homes that were planned here and not planned for Hoboken or New Jersey City, I'd argue you can see some really good successes actually on both sides, right? To push off the down. So just congratulations. Someone hangs out a lot of the transit villages, but not for what happens. They don't exist. So.
Adam, thanks for all you did with all that. And just, you know, one other, just keep in mind, everybody, that the areas in the Highlands are like perfect areas for these mega warehouses as to where they're positioned. So we need to remain vigilant for a lot of reasons.
Nice to see you, Senators, and Michelle and John. My name is Elliot Ruga. I'm the Policy and Communications Director for New Jersey Highlands Coalition. I see one of the greatest challenges we're going to face in the Highlands is that as more and more land becomes uninhabitable in New Jersey because of sea level rise and inundation, those people are going to want to move to higher ground. Where is that? The Highlands. How do we accommodate them without compromising the values we've upheld the past 40, 50 years of conservation and natural resource protection?
A good question.
It's a good question, Elliot. I don't even know where to go with that. I know.
Yeah. Bring it.
Purported. Go ahead, Bob.
Bring in King Solomon. That's what we need at this point. Somebody brilliant. But the basic issue, the reason why we're in such trouble, is global climate change. And New Jersey needs to mobilize the same way the United States of America mobilized in preparation for the Second World War. Because it's that serious an issue. And at the heart of it, and this is after studying it for many years, my opinion is that the solution is electrify everything with renewable energy. In order to do that, I mean, we have the technologies, the renewable technologies, and they can be done in a cost-effective way. We don't have a grid that works. The problem is, you know, even if when we do have windmills, you're going to have a hell of a hard time trying to get that renewable energy to where it's needed, because the grid, we've taken the wrong philosophy. The legislature, the utilities, the BPU, we've all screwed this up. And what the three groups were always trying to do is to have the least cost, tiniest change to the grid, depending on a project or a specific issue. We were never thinking big picture. So what's in front of us is a need to reconductor, change the wires on the existing grid in order to make it workable so that, and we now have swaths of land in Western New Jersey that can put in grid scale solar. They can't connect to the grid. Grid can't handle it. Southern Jersey, they can't connect to the grid. The utilities systems are overwhelmed. They're at or even beyond capacity. So you need this mobilization. You got to change. We have to change the way in which we do energy in the state of New Jersey to have a chance to really amazingly reduce our carbon footprint. But it all starts with the grid, which is counterintuitive to everything that we're saying. But we need to do it. The rest of the country needs to do it. We need to be all renewables, get rid of fossil fuels. And also, another counterintuitive, got to take care of food waste. That half sandwich that you didn't eat for your lunch, it's going into a landfill and it's turning into methane. Methane has 80 times the impact of carbon dioxide early on. So there's a lot of things we need to do in order to try and mitigate Elliot's concern that you're going to have swarms of New Jerseyans looking to build in the Highlands. I mean, we have the limitations now, but if you had a couple million people saying, I got to go there, legislatures respond to pressure. So his concern is legitimate, and we really need to get engaged in trying to deal with climate change in a serious way. And we're doing a little bit. You know, I got to tell you, the governor is a very green governor, but we need to do so much more. So that's my soapbox.
It's a great soapbox. I mean, I don't want to be Cassandra, but Elliot, if we're worried about Monmouth and Ocean County migrating to the Highlands, we have bigger problems, honestly. You know, we have somebody now saying that, well, I don't care about oceans rising. It'll create more oceanfront property. It's really frightening as it relates to a lack of seriousness as it relates to a good portion of the country. But I mean, God forbid, you know, New York City, forget about New Jersey. New York City goes partially underwater, the worldwide economy will collapse. We'll be coming to the Highlands to try to look for food, let alone build a house there.
Absolutely. And by the way, one of the very serious proposals that's on the public table now are the Real Road, R-E-A-L, and PACT, P-A-C-T, rules that have been, drafts have been promulgated by the DEP. They're going through a process. But it will dramatically change the way we do construction. It's going to require that we build above the new FEMA elevation limits. And we end up with some groups in New Jersey who it wouldn't take much for me to name them, fighting it, saying, you know, even though your mission statement is to help New Jersey business, you're saying we want to resist the rules so that our members can build properties that are going to absolutely be in harm's way. What is everybody thinking? And the commissioner is, you know, I have to believe that the political pressure that's going to be on the commissioner and the governor is going to be enormous. So maybe people who are concerned about the Highlands need to get into the PACT rules and the Real REAL rules and provide some support for those major initiatives to try and make New Jersey a little more sustainable than it is now. And it's only going to get worse.
Senators, I want to thank you hugely for everything that you have both done for the Highlands. We wouldn't be here without you. And we really appreciate your continued commitment and involvement in issues that are important here. So thank you for being here today. There may be an easy fix. We have a fantastic regional master plan. The regional master plan has been endorsed by the State Planning Commission. Therefore, it should guide all agency decisions. Well, you wouldn't be surprised to hear that that doesn't happen. Anything that you can do to make sure that agency decisions are made in respect to the regional master plan and use that as their guide would be incredibly helpful. Anything you can do to make that happen, we would appreciate. And I also want to thank you for your leadership on the legislation you've introduced to try and set aside some of Green Acres funding committed to the Highlands as well. We really hope that that moves forward. Anyway, your reflection on agency actions guided by the regional master plan would really be appreciated.
Sounds like we need DEP to follow the rules, huh?
Right.
Yes, it wouldn't require a change. It's already in the act that that's the way it should happen.
Well, not just the DOT, DCA, all the agencies.
Ben.
I want to thank the two senators especially for their leadership, because people were talking about greenhouse effect in the 1950s and 60s, scientists, and then in the 80s, you know, it started to become known that there was this issue with CO2 in the atmosphere. it's not surprising that we still have half the country that doesn't believe in science, right? In many states, they don't even teach science for you. So it's a huge uphill battle, but part of the problem is, you know, greenhouse effect didn't mean anything to anybody, and then we said, oh, global warming, and then people said, oh, don't say global warming, it's too scary, and we came up with this climate change name. Really, it's climate disaster, right? And you've just been describing all sorts of disasters, New York going underwater, people having to move and relocate away from the coast. I mean, it's a climate disaster, and we keep mincing words, which is just ridiculous to me. New Jersey Conservation Foundation wrote articles in the early 90s about global warming, when that was the term that was being used. You know, when I can, you know, we can show them to you. So it's really frustrating, obviously, that here it is 30-some-odd years later that I've been at New Jersey Conservation Foundation and still have people in the country who don't believe it. But be that as it may, that's to be expected, I think, from our society, because we don't teach people science very well at all. And that would be a big help if we could figure out a way to teach people science. The other thing that I wanted to mention is, in talking about where are people going to go, you know, as we lose land in Monmouth and Ocean and Atlantic and Cape May and Salem and Cumberland County, they're going to try to go into the Pine Barrens. That's the closest place. And right now, state land can still be diverted, right? It has to go through the State House Commission. But I think now, before we get this 50 years from now when everybody has to evacuate, we're not going to be able to protect our state land. Or, you know, the legislature is going to say, forget about the Pinelands Act, forget about Brandenburg State Forest, forget about Portland State Forest, we've got to put people there. Maybe now is the time to strengthen the Green Acres Diversion Rules, the State House Rules, and all those things, protect the Highlands and the Pinelands and all the other public land from being diverted. Because, and of course, obviously, anything can be undone, right? But while people aren't clamoring to build houses in Morton State Forest, maybe now is a better time to make the State House Commission rules and the Green Acres Diversion Rules actually protect our land, because they don't right now. Anything can be diverted. Anything can be sold off. And then you get these cockamamie trades of wetlands and land that's underwater, and people say it's a fair trade. So that we should do that now. And that would be my suggestion.
Just a comment on your opening comment about the leadership of the two legislators for 20 years, is it should give you pause for proposals about term limits for legislators.
I just want a quick note to the bipartisan nature of all the effort that has happened here. You mentioned that Ben was a Republican mayor. We also had Representative Frelinghuysen down in Washington, strong Republican who got the four state Highlands Act passed, and I believe Senator Bob Martin from New Jersey, Republican representative from Northern New Jersey, was extremely helpful and supportive of the Highlands Act. So it's really a true bipartisan effort. And the last thing I want to say is that there's a handout that you can pick up on the desk on your way out that lists the names of the organizations and people that led up to the passage of the act. Thank you.
I just mentioned that when you mentioned bipartisan, the vote in the assembly was 69 to 10, and in the Senate, 34 to 2. So that's pretty bipartisan.
Listen, I want to thank you guys so much. Thank you to our panelists for just really.